All right, thirdly, the guru is not a father substitute. Now what does this mean? We may say, generalizing, that for various reasons quite a lot of people never grow up. Perhaps this is the most striking fact about the human race as a whole, that the majority of its members do not grow up. We went into this too a few weeks ago. Of course, people grow up physically, they develop, they expand, they put on weight. They even grow up intellectually, in the sense of being able to organize their knowledge into more and more coherent wholes. But they don't grow up in so many other ways. They don't grow up even emotionally, what to speak of spiritually. Many of them remain emotionally immature, even infantile, remain emotionally dependent. And because they don't grow up, because they remain emotionally dependent, they want to depend on someone else. They want to depend on someone bigger than themselves, stronger than themselves, someone who is prepared to love them and protect them absolutely and unconditionally. They don't really want to be responsible for themselves. Don't really want to decide anything for themselves. Want somebody else, some other person, some other power, some other authority, even some other system, to decide it and settle it all for them. Now, usually, when one is young, that is to say, literally young, one depends, one can depend on, one's parents, either father or mother or both. But as one, I won't say it grows up, but as one grows older, one has to find somebody else. Mother and father maybe are no longer there. Maybe you've left them, maybe they've died, and so on. So you have to find substitutes for mother and for father. And of course, many people find this substitute, find this person on whom they can depend emotionally in the marriage relationship. And this is one of the reasons why marriage is so popular and also, on many occasions, so difficult. A number of people, again, find their substitute, their parent substitute or surrogate, in the concept of a personal God. One might even follow Freud in saying that God is a father substitute on a cosmic scale. And the believer expects from God the same love, the same protection as the child expects from the parents. It's very significant, I think, that in, say, Christianity, God is addressed as our Father. And again, a father substitute is often found in the figure of a guru. One might even say a pseudo-guru, because the guru is not really, not truly, a father substitute at all. But only too often the followers try their best to make him such. We've all heard, for instance, of Mahatma Gandhi, great Indian politician, thinker, activist, even revolutionary, some people would say spiritual figure, religious figure. I think it's rather significant that for most of his life he was addressed by people, especially by his disciples, as Bapu. Now what does Bapu mean? Bapu means father. And I remember that when I was in Western India, I was in contact with quite a number of religious groups and gurus and so on. And I found that there were quite a number of gurus who, for some reason or other, rather liked to be addressed as Dadaji, which means grandfather. And it seems that people used to like to address them as grandfather. This rather amused me. So once, just for a little fun, as it were, when I was in Kalimpong, and when I had with me a number of my own pupils, most of them Nepalese, I asked them, just partly from curiosity, partly for amusement, I asked them how they regarded me. At that time, I was about 30 years of age, and they were in their late teens and early 20s. So when I asked them this question, they clasped their hands together with great emotion and great fervor. They said, "Oh, sir, you are just like our grandfather." So this, I must say, took me rather by surprise. I've also known in India quite a number of female gurus. They're not very much in the news. They're not so well known in many cases, or in most cases, as the male gurus. But I noticed that these female gurus were invariably addressed as Mataji, which means mother. And I found at least one who was addressed by her followers and disciples as Ma, which means mummy. Now I remember one in particular, and this is perhaps rather interesting and instructive. This particular lady was about, well, she was quite elderly. When I first got to know her, she was about 52 or 53. Now she's in her early 70s, and she had quite a number of young men as her disciples. And they used to spend nearly all their time with her. And I discovered, quite by chance, that nearly all these young men had lost their own mothers. They were orphans, or at least semi-orphans. And they used to sit around in the evening in the meeting hall, and they'd all sing Ma, which means mummy, in chorus, through the accompaniment of drums and cymbals. And they'd sing nothing else. It was Ma, 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 like that all the evening, sometimes keeping it up for 2 or 3 hours, and getting really worked up and sort of gazing at her and singing in this way, you see, mummy, mummy, mummy. And they believed that this was a really new development in religious history. And they said, they used to tell me, that what they called Maism would be the future religion of humanity. In other words, the worship of mother, especially this particular mother. Now, I wasn't surprised to find, after hearing all this, that there was very intense competitiveness and jealousy amongst them. And each of them clearly wanted to be the favorite son, if not the only son. And I also noticed that there was a certain amount of depreciation among them of other gurus. Just as you find among children. I mean, children get talking and arguing, and one child says, "My daddy is much stronger than yours," or "My daddy is much richer than yours," or "We live in a much bigger house than you do." So in the same way, one used to hear these disciples disputing and saying, well, some other guru that they'd heard of or been to see wasn't nearly as great as their own guru. Their own guru was the biggest and greatest and so on. And this is surely a very immature sort of approach. And this reminds me of a Tibetan story. It's a story from my own experience. And this concerns the disciples, the different disciples of 3 great Nyingma Pa Lamas, whom I knew personally in Kalimpong. They were all 3 very, very great, very well known, and they had many disciples, and I think I may say that they all 3 of them were really true, genuine gurus of great spiritual experience and attainment. And they were all Nyingma Pa. They all belonged to the Red Cap sect, that is to say, the more strictly tantric sect. And they were very different. One used to just wander around on his own in a sheepskin robe dyed red, and he was rather difficult to catch hold of. He'd always be on the move. Another lived at home with his wife, sometimes wives and children, and used to give initiations to hundreds, even thousands of people. His initiations were supposed to be particularly powerful. And another was a monk, the head monk of a monastery, who was a very, as he were, orthodox representative of the Nyingma Pa tradition. Now, I was told by one of the disciples that once upon a time, a discussion arose among their various disciples, because they had quite a lot of disciples in common. That is to say, people who take an initiation from either 2 of them or even all 3 of them. So the topic which arose among the disciples one day was, who is the greatest among these three? The disciples were very curious to know this, whether one was greater and the other two were not so great, or whether two were greater and one was less. And they're very curious, very inquisitive to know all this. So they were talking about it quite a lot among themselves. So in the end, one of the bolder spirits plucked up courage and he went to one of these gurus and he said, look, we've been talking like this. We're wondering amongst all you three, who is the greatest? When we've got great regard, great veneration for all three of you, but we'd like to know who is really greatest? Who has gone furthest? Who is nearest nirvana? So the guru just smiled and he said, look, I'll tell you. He said, amongst we three, there's one who is very much more highly developed than the two others. He said, but none of you will ever know who that is. This was his reply. Now, having said all this, one may say that this is not to say that people do not need father substitutes, at least for a while. A lot of people do need them. They may be necessary, or a father substitute may be necessary for their psychological development. It may help them to evolve, help them to grow. But it's not a guru's real function to be a father substitute. One can, of course, say that the function of the guru is analogous to that of the father. Analogous. That is to say, that the guru fulfills on a spiritual plane, a spiritual level, the same function that the true father fulfills on the ordinary human level. But the guru is not a substitute for a father where a father has been lacking or where he is still required.